Well, welcome to our first support call. And a lot of you were at the camp last weekend. And I have this tap at home where you pour water and it's all cloudy and has all these bubbles in it. And it looks undrinkable. But then if you just let the glass sit for a little while, then the bubbles go away and the water becomes more clear. So hopefully whatever kind of clouded water you guys had from last weekend's camp, everything has become more clear with the passing of time. Or maybe not. Maybe things have not become more clear and it's just gotten more cloudy, thus the support calls. So welcome. And we had a lot of people submit questions, but we only have 4 people on the call right now. And let's see, why don't you guys tell me your name, because we have so few of us. You can just tell me your name and then tell me how you're doing. Maybe just give me like 30 seconds of our history, and let's start there. Jaquetta, why don't you go first?
I'm Jaquetta, and things are going pretty good. We have about a 7-year history, I guess. We've worked a lot. I wasn't at this last camp. I've done one other camp since The Art of Fear, and I've done some previous things around Ski to Live.
Well, welcome. Kyle, why don't you introduce yourself?
Yes, my name's Kyle. I attended the camp last weekend. For me, it was a phenomenal experience. I was kind of on a 2 or 3 day high. Following the camp, it was a very good experience. I've been practicing the 4 steps. And like some of the questions I had submitted, I think we can discuss. But so far, it's been a great experience.
Well, welcome. Thank you. David, why don't you?
Yeah, hi. This is David, and I was at the camp last weekend. And, the history. So I attended the, is that called Big Mind? Is that what it is?
Huh?
The Big Mind camp up at, Alta in 2004 as a spectator, not a skier. And, how's it going? I'm really kind of still stuck, but it's the pain that's sticking me. So nothing new.
And I don't know if you guys caught what he meant by attending in 2004. This is when I was running ski camps, and my teacher, Genpo Roshi, a world-famous Zen master, was conducting the evening session. So his first experience with shift wasn't shift at all. It was with Big Mind by the master himself. So we have 2 more people that just joined us. 3 more people. So we're introducing ourselves, 15 to 20 seconds. Let's shorten it down. Who wants to go next?
Okay, I'll go next. It's Glenda. Hello?
Hi, Glenda.
Hi.
Hi, Glenda.
How was camp for you?
It was so amazing. I attended the Fear Camp, and I've been practicing and just trying to soak in everything that I learned, and it feels pretty amazing. And sometimes I also get a little confused, and some other times I have like a really big aha moment. And so it's just baby steps right now, but I am really excited about, you know, doing this way deeper and getting to the other side. So it's really good.
Great. Welcome. So we have 2 more people that need to introduce themselves, and we're talking like 15, 20 seconds. Who wants to go next?
I can go. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
So hi, Kristen and Glenda and anyone else on the call. My name is Jason. And I'm not sure what I'm supposed to say.
Just 20 seconds of just how you know me and
okay.
For just.
Well, I have known Kristen only for about a year, did the Art of Fear webinar, but connected with her to bring her out to the Spartan Race obstacle racing championship event in Tahoe last year when she was just soon after she had published her book to be part of the goings on there and do a podcast because her message is so powerful, I think, for anybody trying to take on new challenges. And
I'm going to stop you, Jason.
Okay, sorry.
Because we don't have that much time left, and I only wanted the intro to be about 20 seconds. So, big fan. But I want to get onto some content because we have a lot to cover tonight. And there's one more person here. Just who is there that hasn't introduced themselves yet? All right, we have a mystery person on board. Well, welcome. And I wanted to have you all just kind of introduce yourself because we have some people that were here from last weekend and we have some people that are here from working with me another time or have read my book, like with you, Jason. And so we have a medley and not everybody knows everybody. We won't necessarily introduce ourselves every single week during these calls because usually I want to get right to questions because we don't have that much time, like I said. And you can always submit questions before these calls in advance if you want, and then your questions will get priority. And then if we have leftover time at the end of the session, then you can also submit questions towards the end just by saying, hey, I have a question. So I'm not very internet savvy, and so I'm going to be looking at my list of questions rather than the computer screen. So I assume that there's some place to raise your hand. But I will not be looking at the raised hands. You just have to interrupt if you want to say something. I may go back and forth, especially towards the end, to make sure that I haven't left anything behind. But I don't think anybody's on the computer screen. I think most people are on their phones anyway, so that's the way we're going to do it. Oh, and the other thing is normally I would do these via computer, but because I'm going to Burning Man for 2 weeks, the next two sessions will be at Burning Man. And so I figured that we had better chance of having calls go through versus a visual that just the internet out there is not very good. All right.
We get to live vicariously through you at Burning Man.
Yes, I'm going to be calling you from Burning Man. Imagine that. All right. So let me just get to some of these questions.
It might be an Uma.
And, okay. So if you want to say something, just say Kristen. And that'll stop me. But if I'm in the flow, if I'm talking about something, wait until I pause and say, is there anybody that has questions or else the call could get kind of chaotic. So just wait until I pause and say, does anybody have any questions? And then you can ask them. All right. So does anybody have any questions? All right. Let's get right to it. So David, I know you're on the call and you and I had emailed before and I thought that I'd start off with your question. I didn't write it down, though. You wanted to ask about how what I teach ties in with Zen. Maybe you can ask it in your own unique way right now.
I had that experience with you in 2004 with the Zen Master. And I'm forgotten how the art of fear is tied into the Zen through Big Mind.
Well, I will, my training is entirely in Zen. And that's the tie-in. And Shift, the Game of 10,000 Wisdoms, is Big Mind. And those of you that are on this call besides maybe Jaquetta probably have no idea what I'm talking about. So let me explain. My teacher, Genpo Roshi, started facilitating a form of voice dialogue that added transcendent voices to it about, 2000, actually, I think it was 1999. And it put him on the map for being one of the most significant teachers of Zen wisdom in the West. Because the facilitation tool, Big Mind, Ken Wilber called it the fourth turning of the wheel in Zen Buddhism. Basically, the first turning of the wheel in the history of Buddhism was the life and teachings of the Buddha himself. I mean, imagine that. Like, this is considered a major, major contribution to the world of Zen, this Big Mind. Genpo has trained me. He used to run my ski camps with me, but then he got so big I couldn't afford him anymore, and he wanted to train me how to facilitate Big Mind. So that's my history. At one point, because I started working with people who had mental illness for liability reasons, I severed ties with calling it Big Mind because they were afraid of lawsuits, and so I started calling it Shift, the Game of 10,000 Wisdoms. But basically, what you have experienced in my book and in my work, every single one of you, is pure Eastern Zen. And what does that mean? Well, just seeing and honoring, like seeing what your relationship is with yourself, with your emotions, with your 10,000 voices. The traditional number in Zen actually is 10,000, 10,000 parts of you. Just becoming aware of them and aware of your relationship with them. And then honoring those 10,000 voices, including the bad ones, you know, which, and I've really started to focus primarily on our relationship with fear, becoming aware of our relationship with fear and honoring that part of us. And so that's what Zen is. Zen actually comes from Zen Buddhism. And you can actually take the word out of Buddhism. There's many different types of Buddhism. Zen Buddhism is trying to feel what the Buddha felt. And Zen, it means to become one with. So when you become one, like Zen skiing, when you become one with the skiing, Zen living, when you become one with your life, Zen fear, when you become one with your fear. And so all this is a roundabout way of saying basically my book is pure Zen. I think I have one sentence in there talking about Zen, saying basically if you practice Zen, then you'll recognize my teacher's teachings in this book. I dedicated the book to my teacher. But I left the word Zen purposefully out of the book because people don't really understand what it is. They confuse it with New Age practice, and I didn't want that word to be a bucket of cold water over otherwise enthusiastic readers. So that's the tie-in. Does that answer your question, David?
It certainly does. Thank you so much. That was very enlightening.
Okay. I also wanted to address, I believe you had, I don't see your questions. Well, they may be down lower on the, let me just scroll for a second. I do know that you had said something about fear and pain, and I responded personally to you about that. This, you were worried that what I teach is not going to help you with your fear of pain. And I wanted to clarify something from the camp last weekend, because I said that I can't help you with that. What I meant is that I can't help you with the pain. Like, I can't lessen your physical pain. But I can help you deal with the fear of the pain, which is a completely different thing. And fear is all about loss. It's like, I know that you've lost a lot of things that you love to do, i.e. skiing. I mean, even just going for a long walk around the park, I know that you can no longer do that. And of course, you're going to feel a lot of fear around your physical problems. You know, there's a lot of loss there. And I talked at the end of camp about parts of you that are fading away and parts of you that are growing. Well, the parts of you that are fading away, you're losing them. And of course, you're going to feel a lot of fear. And I just want to say that you can either resist the fear, or in this case, the pain. You can either resist, let's just call it pain. You can either resist the pain and become more in pain. Another way of saying that is you can resist the fear and become more fearful, or you can embrace it and still be in pain and still be afraid. Those are your two choices. So you got to either resist it or embrace it. And if you resist it, then that pain is going to become very magnified. And that fear is going to become very magnified. But if you embrace the pain and the fear, you're still going to feel fear. You're still going to feel pain, but it's going to be, you're going to just live a more of a Zen life. You're going to be more kind of at peace with it. And so that's where I can help you. Do you follow me? And do you have any questions?
I got it. Yeah, no, I understand.
And I'll say one more thing, and I hope everybody's listening too, because we're all going to go through pain, and we're going to get old, and we're going to decay, and have more injuries, and some of us are going to get cancer, and on and on and on. So these experiences are going to bring up a lot of pain, and they're going to bring up a lot of fear. And, of course, I want to keep things centered and focused on fear. So I want to say this. Only when you feel afraid will you finally and truly do something that will make you grow. And so this fear is actually here to help us grow. It's like, oh, my gosh, I'm so afraid I'm going to die from this cancer, or I'm so afraid I'm never going to live without pain again. Like, how is that here contributing to your growth? And taking it back to you, David, I had mentioned that there are parts of you fading away and parts of you that are growing. Like, the fear is a reflection of the parts of you that are fading away. Of course, you're going to be afraid about that loss. Fear is tied with loss. But also the fear about your future, which we had talked about in camp. And it's that fear about your future is actually here to help you grow. Like, what wants to happen next in your life? That fear is here to help you be sharp and focused and kind of tap into that next iteration of your life. Again, do you have any questions?
Nope, I understand. Thank you.
Thank you. Does anybody else have any questions? Peter, are you on the call?
I'm a little curious. Yes, Peter and Beth are here. And I was just,
okay.
It's Beth. I'm just going to ask you, I really like that comment that fear is lost. Can you say just a little bit more about that?
Well, let's just kind of break it down. Like fears, for example, fear of, like, somebody, Beth, tell me something that you're afraid of.
Okay, so I just took some steps and I quit a volunteer position, and fear is there. I didn't really so much expect that. I mean, guilt and other things are really there, but there is just a lot of fear. And I guess when you say it's lost, then yeah, I can start thinking like there's loss of those relationships. There's loss of that, like, oh, I'm proud of this volunteer thing. Oh, you know, there's fear for how they're going to be without me, whether it's going to be okay, all that kind of stuff. But the way you just tied it together so carefully there, I don't know. It struck me.
Right. Well, you may have just answered your own question. Like, if you ever feel fear for something or fear about something, even snakes, right, there's always, you can always journal about the potential loss. And also, like,
right,
loss of your identity that was tied,
yeah,
in with that position. I mean, you obviously were with them for a span of time because it meant something to you. Maybe these people meant something to you. Maybe the cause meant something to you. Or taking it to an extreme,
yeah,
example, like if you're going through a divorce, you know, fear of giving up the hopes and dreams that you had for your marriage, or the dream that you had for, you know, who your spouse could ultimately be or who you could be in that relationship. There's always going to be fear of that. And there's also fear of the unknown, like, who am I without this volunteer position, or who am I without this marriage, or who am I about, you know, just the future? I mean, just I've given up this one thing, you know, and
yeah,
now I'm moving into the next phase of my life, and I have no idea what that's going to look like, which is also
right,
very scary.
Right.
Fear of the unknown.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, ponder that for a second, right? And how,
yeah,
big is the fear of the unknown? Oh, my gosh. I actually said in my book that fear of rejection is the biggest fear that we have, but I'm actually just sitting here right now wondering if fear of the unknown might be bigger. Anyway, just a thought.
Okay.
Anybody else have any questions before we move on? So, Peter, I know you're here as well, and I wanted to address your questions next. Peter, are you here?
Yep.
All right. So you wrote, and this is in no particular order. This is just in the order that I received the emails. mind you. So, but this works out really nicely because you asked, could you give me some guidance or ground rules on using shift either by yourself or with a partner? One particular question would be if voices should be pretty much general, universal to all people versus specific to one situation or history. So first of all, I'm going to address the second question. When I work with people privately, it's like one of my favorite things to do because I don't think I've ever done the same series of voices twice. Can you ever step in the same river twice? Never. And I pretty much every single time I work with a client, no exceptions, I do a voice, a new voice that I've never done before. Now, wrap your mind around that, right? Because, you know, I have my standards that I'll do in camp, but so the answer to the question is I found that the stuck places are not necessarily general or universal to all people. It is very specific to one situation or history. Like take Freer, for example, 7.5 billion different people, 7.5 different unique relationships with fear. Some people ignore fear, like I used to do. Some people avoid fear. We all know people that don't like to do anything scary. You know, they play it super safe. They're fear avoiders. But the reason for avoiding fear may be very different. And the payoff for avoiding fear may be very different. Some people fight it. Some people drink it away. Like everybody has a different relationship with fear. And so it's not general or universal, except for the fact that it seems pretty obvious to me at this point that most of us, because it's taught in society, are at war with fear on some level. I mean, I think that resistance to anything unpleasant is also a natural reaction to discomfort. You know, that's part of the human experience. Like, you know, you touch a hot stove, you jerk your hand away, you feel an uncomfortable emotion, you want it to go away. So that's the second part of your question. The first part of your question are ground rules using shift. We'll get to that next. Do you have any questions about what I just said?
No, clear.
Okay. So ground rules using shift. And you asked about using it with a partner. I think that you can do this with a partner. I've never advised this before. Well, I actually have. Let me take that back. I have these online at-home courses that I've created. I don't know. I know Jaquetta, you have one of them. I don't know if you've been engaging in it, but if you guys were to possess one of these online courses, then I do a series of voices and I give a list of questions to ask yourself when you're in voice. And that is something that you can do with a partner if you feel inspired, where one person is the facilitator and the other person is being facilitated. But I think that unless you have those courses and unless you have those series of questions in a list, that you should probably just do shift by yourself because it's an internal experience. It would be interesting to discuss it afterwards, though. The times that you should do shift is if you're in crisis or if you're, like, pickled in an anxiety disorder or having panic attacks. You should just do this several times a day, maybe even up to 10 times a day for between 2 and 10 minutes a day until you're out of that crisis. And for everybody else, I recommend that you engage, not shift. This is the four steps. Sorry, I shifted focus. You want to do the four-step method if you're in panic or in crisis, anywhere from 1 to 10 times a day for 2 to 10 minutes a time. But the rest of us just do it whenever you're feeling bad. As for ground rules using shift, I don't think that anybody should facilitate themselves. I just recommend that they do the four-step art of fear method, which is why I outlined that instead. Do you follow? Do I need to say that in a more clear way?
No, I think that's clear. It's kind of like, you know, Beth and I were on the plane coming back from the workshop, and we just kind of wanted to, you know, keep, you know, doing exercises of taking on a voice, but it was like, wait a second, this is, I'm not, you know, clear about this. This, you know, it's a different experience just trying to do it yourself without you facilitating. So that's where this question kind of grew out of.
It's an excellent question, and I'm surprised nobody's asked me it before. And I like to think that I make facilitating shift look really easy. It's actually very, very difficult. I think you just found that out.
right.
You know, Genpo, this is such a huge gift to the world, and I would guess that there's maybe three of us that facilitate this for a living, and he's trained hundreds, if not thousands, of people how to facilitate it, and there's only just a small, small handful of us that actually bring it out there in the world, I think because it's very difficult. And the reason why is in order to facilitate this, this is not going to make any sense, but you have to be in a state of ego and then a state of non-ego and then the conscious apex of that in the voice of the facilitator, in the voice that you ask to speak to. So it's a long journey to get there. And unless you're really kind of embodying the whole kind of dualistic nature of the human experience that includes the transcendent, it's really hard. And you also have to be a really good listener. And you have to be on the inside of the face of all of that I just outlined. So that's why I don't recommend facilitating shift with each other. It'll get really confusing really fast. But please try it. And if you find that you have a gift for doing it, then let me know because I would like to train you because we need more people that can facilitate this, okay?
Cool, yeah.
All right. And that goes for everybody. Moving on. Another question is about how to approach all the repetitive and negative thoughts that either accompany or make up almost the entirety of a bad feeling. I want to deal with my emotions emotionally, but it seems like the thinking is a bigger part of the package. Maybe just accepting that negative thinking is normal and natural and go from there or, all right. So a bunch of questions together. Basically, how do you deal with negative thoughts that are just going round and round? And how I recommend that, and I'm sure this is a question that everybody wants to know the answer to, so pay attention to this. How you deal with negative thoughts is the same way that you deal with negative emotions. I'm going to say that again. How you deal with negative thoughts will be the same way that you deal with negative emotions. Now, with emotions, you want to feel them. So take that out of the equation. And I believe Jason, you asked something about this. And so, Jason, I really want you to pay attention to this. Oh, no, it wasn't Jason. I think it might have been David. Anyway, just if you recognize yourself in this answer, just make a note. All the 10,000 voices just want your attention. How the emotions need to get that attention is they want to be felt. How the mind wants to get that attention is they just want to be witnessed. And so I'll give you an example. In the middle of the night last night, I'm up. I have a million things on my mind. I'm on that Megyn Kelly show on Thursday. You know, I'm just like looping, like, what do I want to say? What is she going to ask? Like, I wake up 3 a.m. and my mind is just doing backflips. And it's negative and it's strong and I want to get some sleep and I can't get back to sleep. And what we tend to do when we have really racing monkey mind is we tend to go and distract ourselves, go get out of the room, you know, read a book, or, you know, we do any number of things to not deal with that monkey mind, and eventually it calms down, and then we go back to sleep. But if you don't want to go through all that, if you don't want to get out of bed, well, certainly, first of all, make your list of things to do that's keeping you up, right? But the other thing that you can do, if it's not about a list of things to do that's keeping you up, is just turn towards the crazy brain, the part of your brain that's keeping you up, and just view it kind of like you're viewing a show. Like you're just an audience member and they have full stage and you're just viewing, and you're not doing this to try and get rid of it or to try to quiet it down. But what tends to happen is it calms right down, it quiets right down very quickly. I do this probably 5 nights a week and I'm able to get back to sleep really quickly, even when and keep in mind it's also sometimes I'll do a body scan. It's not my brain that's keeping me awake. It's some sort of humming energy in my body, in which case I'll spend some time just giving that my undivided attention. So just be aware of, like, raise your antenna. Like, what is going on? What's really going on here? Oh, it's a thought. And it, or it's a story. It's a belief. Or it's an energy in my body. Or it's fear. Or it's emotional. It's mental. Like, what is going on here? You got to start with the awareness. And then once you're aware of what it is that's driving you nuts, right, just spend some time with it. Like you do in step four of the Art of Fear method, just spend some time with it, giving it your undivided attention. If it's an emotion, you feel it. If it's a thought, you just view it like a stage, like it's on stage. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, it does.
Does anybody have any clarifying questions or requests?
Kristen. I have a question. So when doing, this has been like a lot deeper than I thought it was going to be for me, because it almost feels like it's a lifestyle, it's a way of living, and it just makes me actually, it helps me to live more in the moment, which for me is very strange because I'm not used to it. And part of like my anxiety and all of that comes from looking at the future, right? So when flowing in the moment, just in the moment, and how it is very hard for somebody that's used to bringing things from the past or like looking into the future, not to bring any feelings or emotions that are from somewhere else but the present, right? You know what I mean? Because part of this practice for me is like just dealing with what is here and now, right? If I'm going to worry about what I'm going to feel when I'm flying alone, then I'm not just living here and now, and therefore I'm just going to make it bigger. And when I get to the actual place, it's I don't know if it's something that everybody else is experiencing or not, but how to keep that moment clean and just deal with the moment to moment. Because I feel like when it is like that, then it's not so hard.
Okay, I'm glad that you brought this up. And going back to what we originally discussed that David brought up, like I teach Zen. Zen is to become one with your moment. And Glenda, if you could mute yourself because there's a lot of background noise.
Yes, I'm going to mute.
Thank you. So what I teach is just now what am I feeling and can I be one with this? Now what am I feeling? And it's not just feeling. Now what am I thinking? You know, just as aware as we possibly can be. Of course we're programmed to be more like robots, unconsciously just repeating patterns over and over again, repressing this, resisting that, ignoring that, judging that, having a story about that, a habitual pattern about that. This is just about waking up and just becoming more aware of what my deal is. The 10,000 voices help us become more aware. That's why Ken Wilber gives such a strong endorsement about it, is because, oh my gosh, we can just now compartmentalize our life. We can now witness what's going on in our undercarriage, you know, in our unconscious mind. It becomes conscious and available to us. And then the question is, the koan is a riddle, you know, Zen riddle. You know, can I be one with it all? And so those of you that were there last weekend, I think I talked about Jimmy in the park, my autistic neighbor. How you doing, Kristen? And I was walking out to get the mail. And I'm like, good, Jimmy. And then I got the mail, and he asked me on the way back, how you doing, Kristen? I'm like, you know, Jimmy, you just asked me that 5 seconds ago. And he goes, yes, but this is a new moment. Remember that story? So that's kind of how it is. Now, we're not going to do that all day long, every day. We'll drive ourselves nuts. But, you know, can you just be as much in flow with whatever is coming through the hose next and what comes next and what comes next? And on a day that you're doing something big, like I'm doing this Megyn Kelly show on Thursday, you know, maybe you, Glenda, are going to fly soon by yourself without an assistant or an instructor. Right? That day is going to be a big day. There's going to be a lot going on. You're going to become aware of a lot of emotions, a lot of thoughts, a lot of fear, a lot of doubt, a lot of excitement, all of that. Can you just be in flow with all of it? Can you merge with all of it? because these 10,000 states of being and thoughts and, you know, all of that are your superpowers, every single one of them. And they're here to help you ramp up for that big moment. And it's not, you know, it's really, and I know that Jason has a question coming up soon about goals, and we'll get to goals in just a second. Like, if you have a goal to get in the plane and be calm, you know, the best way that you can do that is to not have a goal leading into that and just be in flow with it all. And I think you'll do fine. Does that answer your question?
Yes, it does. Thank you.
All right, I want to get into Jason's questions then. And before we do that, does anybody else have any questions over what I just spoke about? Kind of like drop by drop by drop, we become a mighty river. You know, all these 10,000 voices are raindrops. And they become the river that takes us to the ocean. I believe I said that last weekend as well. Now, can you be in flow with all of it? And that's a Zen life. Okay. Jason, you had a series of questions. Like, there was one paragraph that was like 10 questions in the paragraph. So I'm going to go through these really fast.
I apologize.
No, I love it. I loved it. But it was really fun for me to dissect it. So I'm just going to go through each sentence. I can acknowledge my fear. I can feel it, but I can't overcome it. And I just wanted to acknowledge that no one can. You can't overcome it. In fact, fear is actually here to help us overcome difficult situations. We kind of get that wrong. Like, the word overcome does have a role in, when it comes to fear, but nobody overcomes fear. It's always there. So next sentence.
Express myself. Instead of saying I can't overcome it, I feel like I can't make friends with it or quiet it. It doesn't quieten down in the way that you've talked about, or you know, that people, when they spend time with their fear, it goes away or quietens down. But I just, overcome was certainly the wrong way of saying it. I just can't. And I'm not even sure that I, as the question goes on, I think, you know, you see why that happens. But.
Okay. And does anybody else feel like when they do the four steps that the fear doesn't dissipate, or the negative feeling doesn't dissipate? Okay. So if nobody else is having that experience, then I'm still going to answer that question because it comes later in the paragraph anyway. So I'm going to answer that, and everybody else can just listen to it and maybe use my answer as a way to go deeper into the process. So moving on, the resistance I have towards an uncomfortable goal, I think it is fear at the root. The resistance I have towards, so basically you're saying the resistance I have is fear at the root. And, you know, this is the one conundrum I have as a fear specialist that talks so much about resistance. Now, really pay attention to what I'm about to say, because it's trying to put this in as simple terms as possible. Everybody, oftentimes resistance feels like fear. Like, fear feels like resistance. I think at this point, that really uncomfortable feeling that we all associate with being fear, that's actually our resistance to the fear. But because often fear is there to help you resist doing something, you know, it's the lines are really, really blurred at this point. Like you may think, okay, I'm going to jump off this cliff, and the fear's there, and you resist jumping off the cliff. Like, are you resisting jumping off the cliff and the fear is helping you do that and saying, hell no, right? Or are you resisting the fear itself? So you can see that it can be kind of a complicated thing, talking about resistance and fear. But I would say that more often than not, in this kind of little hodgepodge of resistance, fear, like which came first, the resistance or the fear, the chicken or the egg, I would say that more often than not, we're in resistance to the fear itself, and then that resistance to the fear is that awful feeling that we have. So let's do a voice real quick. Jason, why don't we do this together? Allow me, please, to speak to the voice. Like, tell me something that you're afraid of. Just tell me one thing that maybe everybody can relate to that you're afraid of.
I'm afraid to finish a project that I've invested a lot of time and energy and money in.
Okay. That one's going to be a little complicated. Let's make it something more like, I'm afraid of quitting my job. Okay? Allow me, please, to let me find something even more simple. I'm afraid of writing a book. What the heck?
Okay.
All right. Allow me, please, to speak to the voice, the one who resists writing a book. Who am I speaking to?
To the voice of the one who refuses to write a book.
All right. And just to keep things simple so that we don't talk over each other, just everybody answer these questions in your mind, but I'm just going to do this with Jason now. And this is going to be hard because I've never facilitated Jason in voice dialogue before. So you're the voice of the one who's resisting writing a book. Okay? So just feel what that feels like. I don't want to write the book. And notice that fear is part of that equation.
Okay. I'm the voice of the one who's resisting writing the book.
Mm-hmm. Tell me about the role that fear plays in your resistance.
Well,
my cat.
Fear, I'm afraid the fears that I can feel are I'm afraid that I have what I would say in the book would be trivial, that people would judge me. That it would not be, I would not be able to tell the story that's in my head, and that I would fail, at that goal.
Right. And so can you see all this fear is contributing to you showing up and you're the voice of resistance, specifically resistance to writing a book. And so the fear comes first and then that results in resistance to actually doing the thing, you know, the writing of the book. Now, let's do another shift and allow me, please, to speak to the voice of resistance to the fear. Allow me.
Okay.
Please to speak to the voice.
This is the voice of resistance to the fear.
Right. So notice that you're not the one that's resisting writing the book. You're resistance to the fear. And you may be actually the voice that goes off and writes the book and says, F you to fear, right? There's definitely some wisdom that comes with you. But you're a very, very different voice. You have a very different flavor than resistance to the thing. So let's just stop now and just kind of go back to whatever reality was listening before. Because this one is just a subtle little kind of sense of the difference between the two things. So allow me, please, to speak to the voice of Jason again and everybody else. And everybody else can chime in, too, not just you, Jason. But what did you guys get out of that?
Well, I definitely understand that resistance can, at some point, F you, because often that's the only thing that gets me, out of being shut down by fear. And I used to be very good at that fear used to be a signal to take action. And now it's more paralyzing. I can't find that FU anymore.
Okay. And when I was a professional skier, I had resistance to fear, and it helped me become a world-class athlete. You know, it definitely has its merits and its payoff. And I say this all the time, but you can get away with it for about 10 years, and you can be super motivated and go out and just kill it and become great at anything. You know, like, I'm fearless. I'm not afraid of anything. But 10 years later, all of a sudden, just your life starts to go south. And as we were talking before, you know, it shows up 7.5 billion different ways for 7.5 billion different people, the resistance to fear. And it starts to mess up our lives in very unique ways. And so what I see happening with you is that the resistance to fear is either no longer working, or it is winding up being something that's consuming your life. But I'm going to help you, and we're going to get you to start using the Art of Fear method in a more productive way. Anybody else have anything else that they want to add about that little exercise we just did? I've never done that before. That was really interesting to me. But can you feel the radical difference between resistance to the thing and fear is kind of helping you resist it and not doing the thing, and then the resistance to the fear itself?
Yes, I can see sense the difference between, you know, what the fears are and the resistance is. But when I, you know, put myself in situations where I am exposed to what I'm afraid of, so many other voices start crowding in, whether it's the voice of the judge, or the voice of, you know, the controller, or, you know, other things that, like I said, I can't resolve the relationship that I have with fear, which is the primal. And so, just the discomfort increases, or the suffering increases, because the discomfort's so high and the resistance keeps on mounting and mounting. And so,
well, I'm going to help you do that right now. You ready? So,
sure. No, but, yes.
Okay. All right. So, you wrote, but when I examine it, it doesn't help me move closer to the goal. So right there in your language, this is what you wrote to me, is the problem. Because right now you have a goal to use what I teach and use the four steps to get rid of your fear. And it's kind of like, I love to personify fear. And fear is like this whining child, right? And you're like, okay, I'll spend some time with you, and I'll try to find a way to honor you, and I'll feel you, and then will you shut the hell up, right? If you speak to fear like that, they're too smart for that crap. They'll see right through it. And it's only going to make fear kind of piss it off, for lack of a better word. So one thing about, and I keep coming back to Zen. I guess the theme of our talk tonight is about Zen and how Zen has influenced what I teach, and that this is actually a Zen practice, is that in pure Eastern Zen, like meditation, you know, Zen is considered Zazen, meditation, you sit without a goal. There's no goal to feel better or to sleep better or to get fear to calm down. You just sit. There's a saying in Zen is good for nothing. You know, if you get into Zen to improve your life, you've missed the point, which is there is no point. Like, Zen is really nuanced like that. That's Eastern Zen. Now, my teacher teaches pure Eastern Zen, but he's starting to kind of transition, because he'll have more students in the West if it actually helps improve your life, if it helps you feel better. But being trained in Eastern Zen, you know, and then trying to present it in the West, it's like, we won't sit. We won't do this practice. We won't do the four steps unless we think it's going to make us feel better, unless it's going to reduce our fear. It's a bit of a conundrum. So there's a saying, well, actually, I'll tell it as a story. So a monk went to a master and said, I want to study with you. I want to achieve enlightenment. How long will it take if I study with you to achieve enlightenment? And the master said, well, 10 years. And the monk said, 10 years? Oh, my gosh, that's so long. Well, how about if I study nights and weekends and I sit, you know, 20 hours a day and I give it everything I've got, then how long will it take? And the master said, 20 years. So what you have going on, Jason, is that you have a goal here. And I see Glenda, you having a goal, and I see Jaquetta having a goal. It's like I see us all, because we can't help ourselves. We're Americans, right? We're Western. We all have a goal to get our crazy brain to shut the hell up and our negative thoughts to shut up and our fear to go down and feel better about ourselves and be more at peace. It's like we can't help ourselves here. But it's that need for a goal that is actually going to take this a lot longer for it to kick in, for it to work. So you continued writing. It's only 1% out of the basement. Or is fear cloning itself? Oh, is it only 1% out of the basement? Or is fear cloning itself? Each time I bring one out, there's another one hiding deeper. So I want everybody to get this. So fear is just fear. It's not fears like fears of this or fear of that. That's fear plus a judgment, a belief, a thought, a story, you know, all of that. So just simplify things as best you can and just realize that fear is there. It's a sensation of discomfort in your body. And yes, it's always going to be there. There is no end in sight of things to be afraid of, especially in today's crazy world. Everything is run through our amygdala. You know, it's the first kind of wall of defense, receiving all information. And you are always going to feel fear. So how you treat that fear is very, very important. So it's not cloning itself, right? There's always going to be more behind it and behind it, behind it. So you also wrote, would you say that I can get close to safe fears, but not, you think that you can get close to safe fears, but not truly scary ones. It's easier to get to deal with the kind of mild fears versus really extreme fears, of course, but the process is exactly the same. And finally you wrote, I know I am not really feeling the fear. I'm identifying it, looking at it through binoculars, but I am terrified of the fear. How do I truly feel the fear? So, and really this is kind of what our whole practice comes down to. Like, are we doing these four steps right? You know, are we taking Kristen's experience? Are we taking the camp? Are we taking, you know, quite a years of working with Kristen? And am I really doing this right? If it's simple, if it feels simple and the fear dissipates, then you're doing it right. If it feels hard and you're confused, then listen up. It reminds me of a story. This king had all the riches in the land. He was so rich, but, you know, there was this door in his kingdom that was locked, and he had heard that behind that door was 10 times what he had, and he just could not get through that door no matter what he tried. Finally, he said, in desperation, he said, I will share the riches behind this door with anyone in the kingdom that can help me break down that door. So there's a lineup a mile long the next day, and they tried everything, explosives, a big batting ram, like you name it, and nothing worked. And finally, one guy walked up to the door, put his hand on the doorknob, turned the knob, and opened the door. So that's kind of what we're going for. I've been talking for a long time. I'm going to pause. Give people a chance, and let's get everybody involved. Anybody that wants to ask any questions or say anything before I just give you really, really specific, super door-turning advice on the four-step art of fear method. Any questions?
Kristen, I have a question, because I'm listening to everything that's going on, and then I'm thinking, so there's a lot of resistance, obviously, because we have these goals, and there's resistance that makes the fear greater, but what do you think about action? You know, like very small measures of action. That was my only question. Like, is that going, would that help?
When you say action, what do you mean?
So, for instance, like, we do have a fears of, you know, the big picture, right? But if we place ourselves just within this moment and we take just a small, tiny step, like a small, tiny action towards that huge goal, I wonder if actually, like, it helps the resistance. It's like, I don't know how to explain it, but it was just a question that I had when I was listening to a gentleman talk about the resistance and the fear for, like, writing this book.
Okay. So there's right action, and then there's, you know, there's no such thing as wrong action. You know, it's always a step towards our growth, even if you fall into a hole. But when I hear you say, and you brought this up a few times, be in the moment, be in the moment, I see that you have a goal to be in the moment. And yet again, we have goals. You know, why are goals a problem? I mean, there are a million stories in Zen about just the plight of goals in these monks. You know, they're sitting in monasteries and they have a goal to achieve enlightenment. Like, there are a million stories, and I won't get into that. And I see you having a goal to be in the moment, and it's very noble. But it's the same as the goal to get rid of the ego and to be more in gratitude and forgiveness and to be all about choose love over fear and all of that. It's like trying to just be something other than whatever it is you are in that moment. So again, this practice is about let it be. Like, if you're in the moment, great. If you're not in the moment, notice that. Isn't that interesting? And then all of a sudden you're in the moment, that next moment, because you just had an awareness of the fact that you're not in the moment, right? So when you're not in the moment, just let it be. When you are in the moment, let it be. This is not about forcing anything or trying to be something other than what you are in that exact moment. You follow?
Yeah, okay. That's actually really good that you brought that up, because then we go from one goal to the next, right, without really realizing. So, yeah, thank you.
Right. Like today I got in a fight with my husband, and I just went so unconscious and just went into false self and just went into my cave, for those of you who have read Men Are From Mars, and I just kind of spun out and got pissed off, and I was just like a moron for like a half an hour. And then I'm like, huh. And Kurt said, you've been a moron. I'm like, you know, you're right. I've been a complete moron. And then I dissected it, and all of a sudden I woke up and I was more present, and then I was feeling alive again, and I wasn't down in the hole anymore, in the chasm. And it's just like, this is our lives. Every moment, like Jimmy, you know, how are you feeling now? Now how are you feeling? You know, are you awake? Are you aware? Are you totally unconscious, just repeating old stupid patterns, you know? It's like, it's all enlightenment. It's all enlightenment. And at the end of a Zen master's life, they're always asked, you know, what did you learn, you know? And most answers from Zen masters are like, oh, I've learned that I'm a complete moron, or I've learned that I have made just one stupid decision after the next. My favorite answer to that question, what did you learn? Oh, I learned so much. I learned that the sun rises in the east and sets in the west. I've learned that the mountains are high and the valleys are low. I've learned that my eyes are horizontal and my nose is vertical. And when I'm hungry, I eat. And when I'm tired, I sleep. It's really beautiful. But a man that just sat and became as conscious as he possibly could over 80, 90 years of his life, you know, that's all he learned. It's beautiful. And would one of you that's making a bunch of noise just mute yourself? I want to just kind of finish up with action, to just be one with whatever it is that's coming through your host. Jason, I would recommend that you, just to finish this off, become familiar with the voice of the one who's terrified of fear. Like, get to know this voice and spend some time, I say sitting as it, but maybe doing the four steps with it. Like, just be the voice, or feel your terror of fear. Like, feel that voice for a while. Like, this is your practice for the next week. Do it a couple times a day. Just sit and just be aware of how terrified you are of fear and spend some time feeling that terror without trying to get rid of it. Not a goal to get rid of it. Not a goal to change it. None of that. Just feel it.
Okay.
The second thing that you can do is change your language. You know, spend at least a week doing that, though. And the next step after you're done with that, and I almost don't even want to give it away yet, but write this down and don't do this for at least a while until that one voice, the one who's terrified of fear, calms down. The next question that you have is, am I willing to feel fear? Now, to do this, and this is for everybody, you know, how you can make this as simple as possible is get out of your mind and get into your body. That's how you turn the door on the riches. You just get in your body and you feel the fear. Or in this case, the voice of the one who's terrified of feeling fear. And, you know, even saying that, I regret it. Don't think voice. Like, you're just Jason and you're feeling how terrified you are of feeling fear. So get in your body. We're no longer doing shift. You're just feeling your fear like a rider feels a horse or like a swimmer feels the water. Any questions?
It's Beth again. I feel pulled to use a journal to keep me focused just even on the four steps, because my mind wants to just go back to something's more comfortable, something's not scary, whatever. What do you think about that?
I think that's great. And in my online courses, actually, I always recommend that people journal after they do the four steps. So I'm glad that you brought that up. And yes, if you feel your feelings, you're going to have a lot of aha moments. And it would be great to journal about that so that you can kind of drive them home. And let's go over the four steps, like the one who's terrified of fear. The first step is, of course, I'm terrified of fear. It's normal and natural for me to be terrified of fear. Nobody likes to feel that kind of discomfort. Second, can I find this fear of fear in my body? Third, what is my relationship with that fear of fear? You know, I hate it. And then the fourth one, can I spend some time just feeling it? And, you know, you may even, if you really want to get complicated, but keep it as simple as possible, just feel your hatred towards your fear of fear. How's that for an earful, Jason? So feel your hatred of your fear of fear. That's kind of even one step deeper.
That I can do.
Okay. Without a goal. There is no goal to get rid of it. That is the single most important thing that everybody has to remember. You're doing these four steps without a goal. Otherwise, it won't work. Fear's too smart for that crap. All right, I'm just going to answer a few more things. And if I didn't get to your questions, Kyle, I didn't get to yours. That's kind of it. I'll do them next week. Let's see how fast I can go through these next two. Could you have had the same success or career if you had had the healthy relationship with fear now as you did when you started and ignored repressed fear? Basically, could I have skied as well as if I had known what I knew now? So I did some things right and I did some things wrong by fear back then. The things that I did right by fear made me a world-class professional athlete. The things that I did wrong by fear caused a lot of injuries, burnout, adrenal fatigue, PTSD, and on and on. So yes, I would have been a lot better athlete. Certainly I would have had less injuries, which is, you know, half the battle. Half my ski career is just recovering from injuries. So wrap your mind around that. But I probably also would have died. So because I would have been done wild and wilder things. It's like, if I didn't have all those months and years recovering from my injuries, you know, to think about things, then, I would have just kept taking bigger and bigger risks, and, you know, the greater the chance that I would have died. So, you know, I had an unhealthy addiction to fear. So that was a problem. And if I had survived my ski career, though, I will say that because I wouldn't have had all this host of problems from my repression of fear, I probably would have had children, and I probably wouldn't have become a fear specialist. So would I change a thing? No. I'm glad to be alive. I'm glad to be a fear specialist. I don't regret not having children, but I really wish that I wasn't limping around the last 2 weeks on my crippled knee, which had a lot to do with my repression of fear. So how's that for an answer? let's see. Last question. When I go through the four-step process, my fear doesn't quiet down. It feels stronger. All right. So we already addressed that. Like I said, likely you're doing the method with goals. Sometimes I hear that people are, they're giving it a steroid injection. That's usually because their mind's involved. If you're just feeling your fear and it's a thought-free experience, or feeling your terror over feeling fear, or feeling your hatred of your terror over feeling fear, it's a really simple process. You don't have to ram down doors. It just kind of organically kind of sorts itself out. You got to be in your body, not in your head, for these four steps. And Kyle, let me see. Let's just get to yours real quick. We started late, so hope everybody's okay with finishing late. You asked, I can understand how to feel my discomfort. That has been pretty easy. Feeling my resistance has posed a bigger challenge. Maybe we could discuss further. So this ties into what we've been exploring, which is why I want to finish with this. And you also asked, can I as a self speak to the other voices, or does this need to be addressed with a facilitator? Let me deal with this question first, and we'll finish with the other one. Basically, I find I can do it, but I've had a lot of practice facilitating myself. I wrote some notes here. It's mostly to identify the problem, though. So a facilitator is key to ask the right questions. If you want to facilitate yourself, basically buy one of my online courses, and you can do that. But otherwise, you're just going to drive yourself nuts. All right. So
yeah, I think you kind of addressed some of that in your earlier discussions as well.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
It's I can facilitate myself, but I rarely do. Mostly, I just feel whatever I'm feeling. You know, I feel like the facilitation process is great, working on webinars and the online course in the groups, the live events, one-on-ones, all that. But really, I hope the takeaway is the four steps. Like that's, you know, and the four steps are about emotions, but you can also use the four steps and just witness any other voice that maybe isn't a feeling in your body. But now, let's finish up with the voice of resistance, because this seems to be coming up again and again. Can we be in flow with our resistance? Can we have a Zen resistance practice? Can we become one with our resistance? And before we finish up with this voice, does anybody have anything else that they want to ask? We want to be in flow with our resistance too. And so the four steps are meant to be used with any of the 10,000 voices. I created, just to reiterate this, I created the four steps specifically to help people deal with fear, but we can use the four steps to deal with any of the 10,000 voices, including resistance. So let's go through them. First step, it's normal and natural to feel resistance. Resistance to negativity, resistance to bad weather, resistance to uncomfortable feelings, resistance to negative thoughts, resistance to toxic people, resistance to the hot stove. Of course, resistance is part of the human experience, and it's a big part of the human experience. Second, can I identify, you know, let's just identify any negativity or anything that you resist, you know, any discomfort, hot stove, you name it. Just identify that now. Like, what is the big thing in your life that you resist right now? And then the third step, notice your reaction to it. Notice your resistance to it. What's your particular brand of resistance? Don't get too caught up on the word resistance. Are you ignoring this thing? Are you trying to drink it away? Are you fighting it? Are you intellectualizing it, thus keeping yourself in your head? You know, just what is your particular brand of not wanting to deal with this thing that is uncomfortable? And then the fourth step is where you just spend some time feeling your resistance. So just everybody close their eyes right now. Locate any kind of sense of I don't want this, or I don't want to feel this, or I don't want to have this thought, or I don't want to be on this call, anything, you know? I don't want to do this work. I don't want to be in this relationship anymore, but I don't want to leave the relationship. Just notice your resistance and just feel it now. Have it be a thought-free experience. We're going to do this in silence for 1 minute. Chiquetta, I'm going to ask you, because I know you've had a resistance practice for quite some time now, to just tell me what that was like for you.
Having had some very powerful experiences of resistance in the last couple of months, it was pretty easy and very bright and recent and strong. It's easy to get there. It's very familiar.
Do you have any advice for people?
Resistance can get you in more trouble than fear ever will. To pay attention and learn to see the difference between the two and recognize what's going on. And just pay attention to it. It takes a little practice. They are very different things, and they feel different once you learn to identify them.
Well put. Kyle, do you want to reflect on what that minute was like for you?
What was that again? I'm sorry.
Do you want to reflect on what that minute was like for you? Were you able to feel your resistance?
Kind of. I think my key is not intellectualizing things, which I tend to kind of do in that exercise.
But that is definitely the holdback. So the holdback with the Art of Fear method working is either being in your head and not in your body and intellectualizing things. You know, can you be in your body? And to relinquish the need for goals, at least for the four steps. No goals. Just sitting, just being with whatever is showing up. So just Kyle, did you hear what Jaquetta said? It gets easier and you start to notice the difference, the very distinct difference between resistance and fear. So can you get out of your head and just into your body and just feel the resistance and not have any kind of story or thought associated with it? Just
yeah, I think I can. Yeah, I think I can.
All right. Is there anything else before we hang up? So this one was action-packed, talked a lot. You know, a lot of people had burning questions. Feel free to submit questions in advance next week as well. I think that we'll probably have fewer and fewer questions. as we begin to practice more together, and maybe we'll spend some more time doing voice dialogue shift in the next call, but for now this was just more heady and less physical and less in different states of reality like I normally work, like I normally like to do. But I will end by saying that please keep falling always. We show up and we rake them up, and then look again, they fall again the next day, and then we rake them up again. And that's our practice. With that, I put my hands together and I bow to you. Thank you for engaging in consciousness practice with me today. Good job, you guys.
Thank you, Kristen.
Thank you, Kristen.
Thank you, everybody, for enjoying the call. All of you, thank you.
All right. Bye-bye. I'm going to stop the call.